You know, the Jordan Peterson interview, I have no problem with that interview. You know, I love hearing from people who have completely different perspectives from me or from the person they're debating with. Mm. I think it's so important that we hear a range of different views. You know, it was interesting that Charlie Kirk wanted to debate, you know, the idea of debating with people you don't agree with. Great, you know, bring it on. It was the abuse afterwards that I had a problem with.
The other thing that's very formative about being in your particular job, maybe perhaps as a woman, is abuse, is these really serious, you know, I was reading that even last year you were getting death threats as a result of the Jordan Peterson interview, that a huge peak of visibility, not just in the UK where most people knew you as a newsreader, but much more globally. How, one, I'd love you to reflect on that moment and why it did become such a weird cultural icon. And since then, how have you navigated when you're caught up into those firestorms and you become a character in a story that was maybe playing well before you walked onto the stage?
Yeah, no, so of course, it's about three questions wrapped into one there. Very sneaky.
Bad practice.
Yeah, no, right. I think the thing about social media is quite horrifying to me, that, you know, it was awful getting the death threats, you know, being doxxed. So my home address was put out online. You know, my 13-year-old daughter, she was 13 at the time, she's 21 now, just stumbling across this pornographic meme that had been made of me on Instagram. You know, it's just, I can't have an opinion on the current laws on social media. You know, that I'm impartial on all that. However, it seems to me as a human being that social media needs to be broadly a level playing field with the real world. The kind of laws that govern us as broadcasters, surely it's appropriate to apply the same kind of standards to social media, particularly when, you know, our kids are getting their news from social media. So misinformation, death threats, misogyny, abuse, racism, all of that is an issue, a big issue. And I think it's polluting the public discourse. Mm. And, you know, people like me who happen to sort of stray onto social media, who are maybe seen as feminist or, you know, but a woman in the public eye, you know, we're sort of fair game on social media. And that's a pretty appalling world. I don't particularly want to live in that world. And I think I've drawn back from social media a lot as a result. Mm. X, there's a lot, if you wander onto X now, there's a lot of far right. Mm. Hatred, racism, misogyny on there. It's just seems pretty problematic to me. And I don't think there's been another platform that's sort of quite taken the place of X. So I'm sort of broadly on X, Instagram, TikTok, but I'm not as invested in it as I was. And you know, the issue obviously is in the future, if that's where people are getting their news, you've still got all of my content goes out on those platforms, but I'm not so immersed in it as I perhaps was at the time of the Jordan Peterson interview. And, you know, the Jordan Peterson interview, I have no problem with that interview. You know, I love hearing from people who have completely different perspectives from me or from the person they're debating with. Mm. I think it's so important that we hear a range of different views. You know, I thought it was interesting that Charlie Kirk wanted to debate, you know, the idea of debating with people you don't agree with. Great, you know, bring it on. It was the abuse afterwards that I had a problem with. And I think, you know, on Channel 4 News, but also on Times Radio, I'm constantly debating, you know, people come together who have absolutely violently different views, but they manage to debate respectfully and you learn something as a result. You know, I had two people on last week just talking about the Jimmy Kimmel free speech row, and they came from very different perspectives, but they had quite a lot of shared ground, and that was I felt that was quite optimistic. You know, likewise, every week on Times Radio I do a political debate with Penny Mordaunt and Jonathan Ashworth, who are opposite ends of the political spectrum, but it's very civilized, very instructive, it's a great conversation, and that's kind of what I'm about, rather than, you know, that hurling abuse. And I was just really taken aback at how that took off afterwards, and I just became the kind of butt of this quite extreme misogynistic comment.
I've been sitting with this you know, as we prepared for today, it's the question that Pilate asks Jesus, like, what is truth? It goes back a very long way, but it feels like we have come out of an era where there was a level of consensus on things like the journalistic method, you know, the scientific method, that we understood humans are great at self-deception. We are full of biases, whether we, you know, had the language of cognitive bias or not. That anyone who's thought seriously about human nature could see both that we are truth-seeking creatures and that we are quite bad at that seeking and easily distracted, and that our homophily means we trust people that remind us of ourselves. And so we created these institutions and these methods to kind of slightly constrain that. But I think what it felt like it did is it sort of disembodied and depersonalized truth because we were scared of these things in ourselves. And I keep sitting with this 1986 essay on bullshit, which is kind of a really seminal philosophy essay about the move from people who believe in truth but are trying to hide it, which is liars, to people who don't really care what's true and they are just bullshitters. And that was, you know, a thing in 1986. But it feels like what we've seen now is an erosion of the institutions that held us into good enough truth seeking. You know, that old reporting adage of like the best obtainable version of the truth is what you do in proper investigative reporting. What do you think has been driving these tides that has, we've sort of surrendered to our worst selves and in lots of places don't seem to care?
Well, and, you know, on that very point, you know, I think Channel 4's Trump v. Truth thing was brilliant. I loved it because, you know, so much of what he says, you kind of, you know, as an ordinary punter, you go, is that really true? And, you know, a lot of the time, it's maybe a tiny bit true, but there's a lot of untruth about it. And I love the fact that Channel 4 sort of fact-checked some of his key claims. I thought that was brilliant. But what's pushed us there? I mean, we saw it in Brexit, and we saw it in, you know, obviously with the election of Trump. I mean, it's people were feeling failed by their democratic institutions. They were feeling left behind economically. So I think it's hardship that has brought us to this point, whether that's economic hardship or just people feeling that the people down in Westminster aren't listening to them and they're not representing them. And you know, you see, it's not new, is it? You've seen it in the run up to World War II. It's that, feeling of people getting left behind that, ushers in populism. And that is what's happening here. And it's what's happening in America. And I suppose that's why, as a journalist, leave the investigations bit for a start, but as a public service journalism, you know, someone who believes very firmly in public service journalism, I think the important thing is to listen to what people are telling you. And a lot of people didn't listen to people who were going to vote for Brexit in the run-up to the Brexit vote. And so, again, to have those opposing views in the studio, just listening to what they're saying, picking up on what they're saying, challenging what they're saying is crucial to me.
Would you think aloud with me for a minute and forgive me, because it's going to take me a while I am not a Channel 4 news style interviewer. This sense I have of the kind of perspectivality, the sense that there is no truth that is not from a perspective, right? That is not embodied, is not wrapped up in our stories and our influences and our formation. And that, it seems to me there's a real generational divide between, and I sit right in the middle of it, between people for whom the institutions and the scientific method and public service broadcasting were the obvious sources of truth because they were defending us against our tendencies to trust people like us, basically, and to like to hear things that we already believe. You know, humans love to be right. We love to be confirmed in what we think. And then a generation coming through for whom the messenger is the message, that who is speaking is as important as what they are saying, because, and I maybe put myself in this camp, we just no longer really believe in like neutrality or objectivity or experts that can deliver us the truth, having effectively stripped out their own objectivity and bias. And so there's a generation that sometimes feels safer with people having all of their subjectivity up front, being like, I'm going to tell you where I'm coming from. And then you can go, okay, do I trust you or don't I? You know, are you able to self-reflect? Are you able to change your mind? Whatever. And I, as someone who worked for the BBC, who loves the BBC, I worry that we can do neutrality, we can do objectivity. Posture really doesn't translate to a generation of people formed in a really different world.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's about There's about five things I want to pick up on there. I'm just hoping I can remember them all. For a start, yes, you've got to acknowledge your own bias. That is really important. But there are some facts that are facts. Trump saying at the end of his state visit that, he'd solved war between Azerbaijan and Armenia. No, Albania, he said, didn't he? That's obviously was a slip of the tongue, perhaps, but it was untrue. So I think it's really important to point out when things are not true. Mm. And there's things that, there's a lot of speculation about, for example, vaccines and, the sort of health effects of vaccines. There are certain things that are true about that and certain things that aren't. And there are also things that we don't know. And it's important for journalists to say, we don't know that, but this is what scientist X says. Mm. And this is what scientist Y says, So you can cite as much evidence as you have, but you don't always know everything, obviously. To get to your point about people, our kids' generation, for example, not wanting, that they want a particular perspective. They want people to be upfront about their views. I get that. And that's why it's important for the BBC, Channel 4, whatever, to be on every platform so that you're not, I think it's really important for people not to be just in an echo chamber and just hearing the views that they want to agree with. I think it's really important to have those views challenged. And I think that the tech giants have a role to play in this in terms of, the algorithms that just push you, the people that you agree with already. I mean, I don't want that on social media. Mm. And I don't think it's healthy for our kids to have their prejudices confirmed in that way. Mm. But I would defend to the hilt that there is a total role for people saying it doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what my views are. Yes, we have biases, but I'm going to leave them at the door for this discussion because that's what I do as a public service journalist. And I think that's crucial because it doesn't, I don't like the kind of, ego-y interviewers where you know exactly what they're thinking and where they're coming from and what their attitude is to the person that they're interviewing. I think there's a real value to having someone say, yeah, sure, I come from a certain terrain, I was brought up in a certain way. However, I'm going to leave any of my biases aside for the course of this discussion. I'm going to be as rigorous, impartial, respectful, and I'm going to listen to what you've got to say.
Yes. It feels so self-evidently part of the important work of a healthy democracy. And I'm always really interested in how it forms the people doing the work. It's not a very coherent question, but I'd love to...
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.